Express, Mr. Carulli.
You can start.
May it please the court, Thomas Carulli on behalf of Alitalia. Federal courts are courts of limited jurisdiction. The jurisdiction granted by Congress to the district courts where a foreign sovereign is the defendant is clear and unequivocal. Original jurisdiction under 1330A, without regard to amount in controversy of any non-jury.
Yeah, sure, but this jury provision is not jurisdictional, right?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It absolutely is jurisdictional.
It's not even in the same statute, is it?
Your Honor, they're in two statutes. 1330A is original jurisdiction. 1441D is removal jurisdiction.
Specification, whether there's a jury or not a jury, why is that jurisdictional?
Because the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act made it such. And as Judge...
I don't know why you say that. It doesn't say that.
Your Honor, the statute clearly says non-jury, and as Judge Friendly said in Ruggiero...
It's one thing for a statute to say, no jury, you're not entitled to a jury trial. What does that have to do with jurisdiction?
Because the jurisdiction of the district court established by Congress for this type of action states it must be non-jury.
What is the remedy, if you're right? What's the remedy? You get a new trial?
The remedy in this case is that it would be a new trial.
Why would it be a new trial? Why wouldn't it just go back to the judge who sat through this jury trial and say, you've heard all the evidence, you make...
Because, Your Honor, he only had and continued to have FISA jurisdiction. And FISA jurisdiction is purely non-jury jurisdiction.
So judge, what? Why wouldn't it just go back?
Because he would still have to be non-jury. His jurisdictional basis...
But he has heard all the evidence already, right?
Well, number one, Your Honor, I don't think it would go back to the same judge.
Why not?
Because he also...
Because he lost before.
No, Your Honor, but he sat in on settlement discuss other things that normally the trier of fact...
That doesn't make any difference. Look, a judge can't conduct a bench trial because he's discussed settlement? Where do you get that from?
Your Honor, I think it would be improvident.
Oh, please.
Your Honor, in this case, it would not go back.
Look, a judge
whether
is
it goes back to the same judge
look,
or not.
I'll
concede that, Your Honor. If it goes back to...
You're extravagant in your arguments. Look, a judge is required to discuss settlement with the parties, you know, encourage settlement. So he can still conduct a bench trial. You're saying if there's a bench trial, the judge can't discuss settlement?
Your Honor, he can. I will concede that point. So if it goes back for a bench trial...
Well, that's my question. Why would it go back for a trial rather than go back and say, you make the finding here, you've heard all the evidence, Judge?
Your Honor, the entitlement to the way a case is presented and what the court considers are different in many respects. And here... We don't know that the judge would have come out the way the first trial came out. He clearly didn't make any rulings. So we're entitled to a bench trial without a jury to make the determination of these issues that were left to the jury to determine.
It's very common for a judge and a jury to be sitting and, you know, hearing a case where some issues are for the jury to decide and some issues are for the judge to decide. There's one trial, and the judge doesn't say, well, I'm not going to decide. I'm going to have a whole separate trial because it might be conducted differently if there weren't a jury. Now, the judge could feel, well, if this had been a bench trial, I would have asked questions, and, you know, I don't feel comfortable. I really feel I should have more evidence. He could do that. But what if he says, look, this is a trial. Everyone got to, you know, testify what he wanted to, and... There's nothing more that I need to hear in order to decide. That's Judge Evans's question. What's the point of the witnesses back?
The point is that without...
In fact, not only that, but even if... I'm wrong about jurisdiction, but even if there was no jurisdiction, what the witnesses in the first trial said under oath presumably could be used for impeachment.
That's correct, Your Honor, but there may be additional...
In the second trial, when you've had a first trial, the witnesses are pinned, basically, by what they testified in the first trial, right, because it's under oath. So the second trial is going to be really boring repetition of the first.
With the exception of additional evidence, additional witnesses, additional discovery that might be conducted?
Now, look, when you have a new trial, that doesn't mean you get a whole new shot at discovery. Why would you have additional discovery?
I'm suggesting that's an option, but I certainly have the right to put on additional...
Option for whom? It's not your option.
No, it's not. I said it is an option, not my option.
I said, look, if the judge is unsatisfied with the development of facts in the first trial, then he can say, yeah, I'm going to have another trial, more discovery, and so on. But if he's satisfied that the first trial adequately develop the facts, then it's Judge Evans' question, why have another trial?
If he's totally satisfied with the development of the facts and therefore does not choose to grant additional discovery nor additional expert discovery, then the parties put on their case based on a knowledge that they can present other witnesses.
No, they can't present other witnesses.
They can't present any witnesses other than we're at the first trial.
Look, the judge controls in a civil trial what witnesses come in. You can't just, in any trial or in a retrial, just come in and say, oh, by the way, I have 20 more witnesses for you. The judge can say, no, I've heard there were plenty of witnesses. You put on your case. Anyway, this is a side issue. Look, I don't think your jurisdictional argument is worth anything. Why don't you give us a practical reason, if there is a practical reason, why we should say that a change in your status, change in a party's status, ought to preclude a change in status that brings about a situation which a jury trial is, you are entitled to a jury trial. Is there some reason why, nevertheless, we shouldn't allow the jury trial? A reason, not jurisdiction talk.
Well, I have to go then to the Supreme Court's decisions in Dole and Grupo Data Flux.
You just have to give me an answer. You don't have to cite a case. Just give me a practical reason.
There's a practical reason, well, a number of practical reasons.
Or whether it's anywhere else.
One practical reason is if we are going to examine jurisdiction at any given point to decide whether it has changed.
Jurisdiction. I asked for a practical reason why this change of status should be ignored.
Because, Your Honor, it could change again tomorrow. My question would be if it changes today, it could change again tomorrow. If American Bar is to advise its foreign clients that the thing to do is to buy and sell shares in your companies to determine whether you get a jury trial or not, and frankly, our foreign clients are fearful of jury trials, fearful of them. So maybe we all should be, but they definitely are. And if we to say that a change of a few hundred thousand shares in the ownership of Alitalia changes its status today, then you also have to examine what happens if Alitalia does that again tomorrow.
You agreed here that they could ask for a jury trial, and you would not object to the timeliness of that request if the ownership fell below 50%. Why would you have agreed to that if you thought never would they be entitled to a jury trial in this case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. We never agreed that there could be a jury trial.
No, you would not object to an untimely request for a jury trial.
Because first off, there's case law in this circuit that if an attorney doesn't request a jury trial in time, he can be sanctioned. Okay?
So it's not sanctioned. You just don't get one.
You waive your right to a jury trial if you don't request it, and can be sanctioned. So that's one. Two, there is no harm, no foul in saying if at some point you want to raise your issue, which we don't agree with, and we can argue against it, we're not going to say technically you're untimely.
Why would you agree to such a thing?
As a matter of accommodation to opposing counsel, Your Honor.
Why accommodate opposing counsel?
Because, Your Honor, it would have involved motion practice, costs to the client.
Motion practice? All you do is say, well, of course, if you file an untimely motion of any sort, you know, we're going to point out to the judge it's untimely.
Your Honor, their jury demand was stricken. They would have, I guess, moved at that point to try to get some ruling that they'd be later allowed to reassert it. We would have opposed that. There's no reason. I mean, it's like giving away sand in the desert at that point. There is nothing. Look, there was nothing.
It makes it sound as if you didn't really care about a jury trial.
Oh, no, Your Honor. We care definitely about a jury trial.
Why were you throwing away one of your weapons against it?
Because, Your Honor, we felt and feel confident that they aren't entitled to it. So the fact that we're not going to hold up the technical hurdle that you might be untimely.
Your confidence is misplaced. So.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Your confidence is misplaced.
I
mean, you may be right, you know, but I don't think you ought to be confident about it.
Your Honor, I see my time is...
Okay, so you gave, I thought, a good practical reason, right? Because now, if you're really panicky about... Well, it's too late. You had the jury trial. But I suppose on the eve of the jury trial, you could have gone to Italy and said, you better buy back Olympia.
That's right. And, Your Honor, they don't have to buy back much. They have to buy
back Alitalia.
Buy back enough shares for long enough.
So and that's a good reason. Is there any other practical reason why we should not permit the change of status to have any effect?
Because, Your Honor, we would upend 200 years of jurisprudence in all areas. In diversity, if someone moves to the state,
no,
do they disturb?
Jurisdiction thing. That's a loser.
I'm interested in your comment you made earlier about why foreign clients are afraid of jury trials. I mean, it could be on the other end, too.
Your Honor, first off, most of the system's jurisprudence don't have jury trials.
Yeah.
Secondly...
But they use American lawyers, right?
I'll tell you. We, for many, many years... we represented Sony, and if you told them they were going to have a jury trial, they were frozen. They fear the system. They fear the prejudice. They fear the process. They fear the cost. So it's a foreign sovereign or not, as a general rule, foreign corporate entities are afraid of jury trials.
But foreign corporations have no immunity.
That's correct. I was just answering the point that, in my experience, they are fearful of being in front of a jury, regardless
of
their status.
But that isn't differentiated. Most corporations are afraid of jury trials. Unless the other side's, like a case like this, where you've got two business entities on each side.
You think a jury might have some regard for a foreign nation, foreign state. Be more respectable than a foreign company. Anyway, why don't you save your time for
Thank
a while.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Grimm?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Terry Grimm for the appellee and cross-appellee on the prejudgment interest issue. I never get a chance to quote a sitting justice on a court of appeals, but the administration of justice and a practical result is no hymn to beauty.
We're not justices, we're just judges. Well, what about Mr. Carulli's point that... if the status of the defendant isn't fixed when the suit is filed, it's just very difficult to plan how you're going to handle the case and whether you're going to settle and so on. And also, there is room for gaming here, right? For strategizing, for saying, if they're going to request a jury trial later, maybe we should postpone this privatization of the company and this and that, right?
No, Your Honor, there's no room for gamesmanship here. Alitalia and Italy agreed with the European Union not to renationalize this company. That's in the record at A398.
Yeah, but notice what that means is that you can imagine, forget the European Union, you could imagine a country deciding, well, we don't want a jury trial. We better renationalize. I mean, suppose you had a case. You start off, and you're a foreign state defendant. No one mentions jury trials or anything like that. Then you privatize, and then all of a sudden, to the surprise of the defendant, the privatized defendant, the plaintiff now requests a jury trial. So they panic, the way Mr. Cooley says, and they go back to their government and say, look, please renationalize us. Change your ownership stake from 49% to 51% so we don't have to face this terrible American jury.
Well, here they couldn't panic, Your Honor, because
they couldn't hear, right. But we're setting down a rule for other cases, even countries that don't belong to the European Union, don't have rules against renationalization.
Let me try to satisfy you on that point, Your Honor. This is the only case that this circuit
no,
has
that's
had.
Not, that is not a good possible. Answer. That's not a good answer. We will be laying down a rule which other courts may or may not follow, and that will govern in all sorts of cases that we can't presently foresee.
I think that's a little too much speculation, Your Honor. I would think the rule would be when judgment has been entered, it's too late.
Case law system. You make a rule, can be modified later, but it will apply to cases that aren't before you.
That is true, Your Honor, in a general sense, but here, as opposed to the authority relied on by my opponent, there was no post-filing privatization, and that implicated a Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial. So you have a tension between something that Italy chose to give up and our Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial, which we preserved.
I don't see the Seventh Amendment. I don't understand that.
Well, it's a right.
Congress doesn't. If there is, you know, a federal case, then it's for damages. You have the Seventh Amendment clicks in. But Congress didn't have to create jurisdiction over suits against foreign corporations at all, right?
Well, they didn't, but they decided that a statute was necessary back in 1976, and the statute has been uniformly construed restrictively. Even the case primarily relied on by my opponent was deciding the statute restrictively by holding that the foreign sovereign had to actually own 51% of the instrumentality, and you couldn't have several tiers of ownership. And
what does that have to do with the Seventh Amendment?
That was not an issue in the case my opponents rely on, but it has a lot to do with the Seventh Amendment because absent a statutory provision stopping it, we would be entitled under diversity jurisdiction to a jury trial in this case. And our view is while there has always been jurisdiction, there's
but
no
Congress,
argument about federal
you
jurisdiction
know,
here.
Remote Seventh Amendment issue or concern if Congress said that your right to a jury trial in a case of this sort depends on your governmental status when the complaint is filed and not on what happens later. If Congress said that, you wouldn't be talking about the Seventh Amendment.
Well, if Congress had said and had laid it down and said, we are now saying that the only determination of foreign instrumentality is at the date of filing.
That's we have to interpret this one way or the other. I don't see where the Seventh Amendment comes in.
Well, I think it would come in, Your Honor, if we're proceeding under diversity jurisdiction. Our theory of the case is that the sovereign and its former instrumentality waived when they signed that stipulation. They knew a jury trial was coming. I wasn't persuaded
that's
by
a separate argument, of course.
And that is one. The other is, I think it only makes sense to look at the present tense. Dole, the leading case relied on by Alitalia, says is has real significance. Well, is was prior to trial. We had a framework in place. It was prior to the final pretrial order. And as Your Honor noted correctly in questioning Mr. Carulli, there's no reason to think Judge Shanker is going to do anything any differently. He carefully examined in this case. He asked a lot of questions. He knew ahead of time he might redo it again, and he's got the record. You'll be sending it back for basically, I'm not going to change my mind.
That's irrelevant to the issue of interpretation of the statute.
I agree that's irrelevant to the interpretation of the statute, but the statute itself I don't think can be interpreted to say that instrument...
It certainly can be, right? It certainly can. That doesn't,
well, I don't... I wouldn't think so, Your Honor.
This, right?
Then we respectfully disagree, but I don't think that the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act should be read to say that the act applies at the filing.
Why shouldn't it be read that way?
Because it doesn't make any real practical sense, Your Honor.
Well, it does. It freezes everything as of the date of filing, and that eliminates the possibility of this strategic behavior and also gives the lawyers, you know, a better sense of how to prepare the case and whether they can settle it.
I think that's all out the window here. Obviously, they didn't think they had any problem doing that. And when they...
You keep coming back to the particulars of the case, but we do have to make a general rule as to the meaning of the statute.
If you want to, Your Honor, you do. But you can affirm on any basis in the record, and you could affirm...
No, counsel, we have to interpret the statute. You're still not answering the question. And what sense does it make to interpret Section 1441D to be essentially the jury or the bench trial right in that statute to be sort of a roving target that changes with the developments in a particular case?
I don't
case?
Think it is such a roving target. As Dole said, we're going to pick time of filing versus time of the action that gave rise to the suit is between those two. I don't think there'd be anything wrong with a ruling that when the sovereign has relinquished its rights and lost its rights and then stipulates that we don't care.
Relinquishment can mean that the Italian government owned 51%, now it decides to go down to 49%, and then maybe it decides, well, you know, because the privatization is very controversial, right? So companies are privatized and they're renationalized. That's happened a great deal in Europe. So why should these vicissitudes in the course of a trial affect the jury, right?
I think it often does, Your Honor. Oftentimes something happens in a trial and a right is resurrected to a jury.
You want to multiply contingencies, right?
Well, how many times has it come up, Your Honor? I can only think of two or three times in the history of our jurisprudence where this has come up, particularly in the Mexican bank nationalization cases, which were Mexico nationalized some of the parties post-filing. And, you know, if that's the interpretation, then we have to read Dole as overruling those cases. The Supreme Court doesn't have to say it's doing it, but I would have thought they might pay attention to the fact that sometimes there is nationalization after the lawsuit has been filed. And in the couple of cases where it's come up, the Ninth Circuit said, well, that's just too bad. We're going to now proceed as though the defendant is a foreign sovereign. So in this particular case, where the foreign sovereign has nationalized, better yet, has agreed and covenanted with the Union, the European Union, not to renationalize, and its consul have stipulated, I see that you affirm this on any basis in the record. And you don't have to reach out and broadly interpret the statute, but if you want, you should interpret it that a post-privatization right or change in the privatization, a change in status, could allow a jury trial. And I think you would also then have to deal with, is foreign sovereign immunity, is the jurisdictional basis lost, and is to then proceed on diversity jurisdiction as the court below found and allowed us to replead and allege 28-1653. Frankly, I would have been happy with just voluntarily dismissing under Rule 41, filing it again in a related case back to Judge Shankier, and away we go. But I was looking after 5 years.
Of course, there was no diversity jurisdiction when you filed, right?
Well, under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, there wasn't. But Alitalia clearly,
But you couldn't have just come into federal court, you know, under 1332 and said, oh, here we are, diversity, foreign state, American company, right? Can't say that.
You couldn't say that under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, although Alitalia pled that they were a citizen of a foreign state.
There's no conferral of diversity jurisdiction.
They are not coextensive, Your Honor.
Over suits against foreign nations.
Your Honor is absolutely correct. It is not coextensive.
It's a little argument on behalf of your opponent. It means that when the suit was filed, really the only jurisdictional basis was the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act.
That was the basis, Your Honor, but the facts establishing jurisdiction which would not serve as a co-basis always did exist. We were always citizens of Illinois. Alitalia was always a citizen of a foreign state, Italy, as they admit.
When Alitalia was owned by the Italian government, it was not a citizen of a foreign state within the meaning of the diversity jurisdiction.
Not within the meaning of diversity, but it was organized and existing.
There was no diversity jurisdiction when the suit was filed.
Your Honor, we always wondered about that, and I think that's one reason they signed the stipulation, because we thought they had privatized sooner than they had.
What were you wondering about?
We weren't so sure that they hadn't already privatized. And they did plead in the removal
petition.
That's a separate issue.
Assuming they hadn't privatized, there was no diversity jurisdiction. It was just FSIA. That was the only jurisdictional basis.
If that was the only jurisdictional basis, you're right.
What do you mean if? You have doubts about that?
If that's the only jurisdictional basis.
Why do you say if? If Alitalia was a state instrumentality.
And there was no privatization, you're right.
Now, let me ask you this. The rule that you're talking about would work the other way, too, wouldn't it?
It does work the other way.
If you had the defendant was just a foreign corporation,
right,
and you file a lawsuit, you had diversity jurisdiction over that foreign corporation,
right,
did business here in Illinois,
right,
and then while the litigation is pending,
right,
that company is nationalized.
We run that risk.
Then it becomes FISA,
right,
the Foreign Sovereign Immunity,
right,
jurisdiction case, no longer diversity, and then there would be no right to a jury trial. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay,
that's
so
how I understand it.
So your argument's consistent, though,
right,
either way.
Right. It works both ways. Your Honors, I have not yet addressed the other points in my brief. I urge you to affirm on all points. They've not talked about any of our arguments on waiver. We think they've waived every point under Daubert, every point under damages, and the statute of frauds. They admitted the contract existed. It was on their letterhead. There was sufficient certainty. We cited the case laws, but I have asked for a limited reversal on prejudgment interest. The court below got it right on its analysis, but then didn't discuss the most important facts which would make New York law apply. That is, Alitalia admitted at trial they wanted New York law to apply. We introduced over 40 exhibits with their other agents saying New York law applied, and the contract itself was moving, the locus was moving toward New York, so that satisfied the justifiable expectation of the parties under the REIT statement factor, and much more importantly, they deliberately, cynically breached this contract in writing in New York. And that was the place where they owed us performance and prejudgment interest should be awarded. And I'm sorry I've exceeded my time, Your Honor.
But you haven't actually exceeded your time.
I got back up. It's the red light's on.
No, that's the orange.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But that's fine. Do you have anything further?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
You've got about 10 seconds before that changes the red.
I figured it was getting pretty close, and I apologize. Yes. There it is.
There it is.
Okay. Well,
so please affirm on every basis except the prejudgment interest and award what Alitalia wanted, which is the application of New York state law.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Graham. So, Mr. Carulli, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Okay. Just two quick points in rebuttal. The Mexican bank nationalization cases that Mr. Grimm referred to are being referred to incorrectly. The Calejo case, which is 764 F. 2nd 1101, and I'll just read right from the case. On September 1st, the government of Mexico nationalized the banks. On August 31st, the plaintiffs had filed their case in state court. On September 30th, 29 days after nationalizing, the case was removed to federal court. So the case arrived as a foreign sovereign case. There was no post-removal nationalization of the defendant in that case. It came to federal court as a foreign sovereign. And the second case was the Wolf case out of the Fifth Circuit. In that case, it was a federal question jurisdiction solely. It went to summary judgment as a federal question jurisdiction solely. Summary judgment was granted. But in the interim, before summary judgment was actually argued, Mexico had nationalized the bank. There was an interlocutory appeal that had nothing to do with FISA. It came back down on remand. The summary judgment had been affirmed. And on remand, for the first time, the defendant raised the issue of complete immunity because they had been nationalized under FISA. And the district court in that case, without analyzing jurisdiction issues, said it wouldn't have mattered because you fit within the commercial exception to FISA anyway. The jury issue never came into play, was never discussed, was never decided. So the nationalization cases are not applicable here. Real quickly on prejudgment interest. the judge got the facts right, and they're overwhelming, that this, that Illinois law should apply. And counsel's reference to Alitalia wanting New York law to apply, the record's clear. His client testified at trial, not only did New York law not apply, but Alitalia took out of the forum agreement the clause that would have said New York law apply, and had New York law applied, that would have been a breach of my agreement. That's the record. So all the other facts are overwhelming. Illinois law applied to the issue.
Why did Alitalia want to be under Illinois law? You'd think it'd be more comfortable with the sophisticated New Yorkers than with us Midwestern rubes, right?
I won't debate sophistication with Your Honor, but the fact is, we proceeded throughout the entire case on the basis that Illinois law applied to everything. It was only post-judgment that this issue that maybe New York law should apply came about. I mean, every motion, every citation, jury instructions, this is all Illinois law. It was a creative post-judgment to decide to try to get New York law to apply on the part of plaintiffs. But that isn't what anyone proceeded on. So Alitalia didn't make a conscious choice to pick Illinois law. We accepted that Illinois law applied. That's really all I have, unless Your Honor have any other further questions.
Thank you very much to both counsel. Very, very well argued. And we'll move on to our...